Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. And the weather's been fairly good, but I bring news. Apparently, the CFI is going to be here in Tacoma for their summit, like, in October. And this is the first I've heard of it. And,
me too.
Yeah. Should be an interesting time. I imagine I should get some very good interviews out of that.
I hope so. It sounds like sounds very promising to me.
Again, this is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. Today we're talking about the Catholic takeover of hospitals. My name is Sam. With me is Libby. How is your word? How's the word trade going, Libby?
It's going.
Fair enough. And joining us for the second time is Valerie Tirico. She is a psychologist and author based in Seattle. Her blog, A Waypoint, touches on issues of free thought and religion, reproductive health, sexuality, and individual freedoms. She has written for Alternate, Huffington Post, and most recently, Ms. Magazine. She joins us today to talk about the incursion of religious doctrine on health care choices via hospital acquisitions by Catholic corporations, as well as whatever we happen to come up with. How are you doing today, Valerie?
Doing pretty well. Thanks for having me here on the show. It's an important topic.
It is. And it, to be honest with you, it's a topic that I have been wholly ignorant on until very recently, until the sort of the attention that it's been getting. So I'm really looking forward to talking about it. But before we get to that, we have some very interesting news and emails. Now, the first email is probably the longest thing I've ever read on Ask an Atheist, but it's really, really worth hearing. This comes to us from Gordon from San Mateo, California. He writes, I found your May 12th show fascinating because Dr. Peter Kreeft was the person who was most influential in my becoming an atheist. Here's the story. It was late 2004, and I would have described myself as a deist with God as the first cause creator of the universe. My God did not do miracles and did not really interact with the world. I almost never thought about God or the question of God's existence. For Christmas in 2004, I asked my wife for both pro and con books on capital punishment, abortion, and the separation of church and state. She brought me the Peter Kreeft book, Three Approaches to Abortion. One of the approaches was what Kreeft claimed was a logical proof that abortion was always immoral. He included a challenge in the book for any reader to refute this proof. I noticed that his exact same arguments could be used to prove that abortion was always moral. At the time, I did not even know that Kreeft's argument included the fallacy of begging the question. But since he had presented a challenge, I responded by writing a letter to him with my proof that abortion was always moral using the arguments from his book. I did not even expect a reply, but I did get one. He handwrote on my letter, sometimes in red pencil, what essentially was a professor's correction to my letter as if I was one of his students. What followed was an exchange of letters and emails that lasted for about 8 weeks, where we argued about morality and objective morality. I look back at this now, and what we were arguing about was the problem of evil. At the time of our discussion, I hadn't even heard of the problem of evil. At the same time that we were exchanging letters, the news in the Seattle area included a story about a 10-year-old girl in Bremerton who gave birth after being raped by her stepfather. I placed myself in the position of being a father of a pregnant 10-year-old daughter. At the time, my actual daughter was 36 years old, but I could remember how she was when she was 10. I tried to imagine how I would have responded. I knew that I would not have stopped at red lights as I drove her to an abortion clinic. Dr. Kreeft told me that even though a raped and pregnant 10-year-old was an awful situation, abortion was always immoral, and a second wrong does not fix the problem and things would work out for the pregnant 10-year-old because God has a plan for her life. I decided to take Dr. Kreeft seriously and consider that I was an immoral person because I was willing to act immorally. I sat in my office chair for almost 7 hours thinking of nothing else but this situation and the moral questions associated with a 10-year-old girl being pregnant. I thought about God and what responsibility God had in the process of a 10-year-old becoming pregnant. This struggle ended in a flash of insight that God is dead. Any all good God with unlimited power who allows a 10-year-old to be raped and become pregnant cannot exist. I walked out of my office and told my wife that I am an atheist. I was stunned. From that flash of insight, I searched out books on atheism. I discovered Harris, Dawkins, Pitchens, Dennett, and more. I discovered the Ask an Atheist podcast, and more, and the rest is history. The bottom line is that I give all credit to Peter Kreeft for guiding me to become an atheist. Thank you very much, Gordon.
That is an amazing story.
Yeah, and
wow.
And actually rather germane to the subject at hand.
Yeah.
This was 2004. I don't really remember this story particularly well. Do you know about it?
No, I don't remember the story either. I mean, a 10-year-old becoming pregnant actually is exceedingly rare. It was one of the red herrings, if you will, in the recent debate over Plan B. It's a, you know, kind of one in a blue moon occurrence, and so they're coming up with this draconian solution, which is to check ID on everyone in order to prevent pregnant 10-year-olds who have $50 in their pocket from walking into drugstores and asking for Plan B, or not pregnant, I guess 10-year-olds, but 10-year-olds who have just had sex.
Right.
But as the story illustrates, when 10-year-olds do have sex, it's almost always some kind of coercive, exploitative sex, unfortunately.
Yeah,
it would have to be. I mean, we've been reading a lot lately about, about teen brides in Iran and recent, laws about that. It's been, on my Facebook a lot lately, but here's sort of a version of that here in the United States. It's religion is religion all over the world, and here's a situation where a girl has just been put in the worst thing imaginable. She's still a kid herself, and she's about to have a kid through the act of force by somebody who really should care about her as a child. And what Dr. Kreeft was saying was this was part of God's plan.
You know, I recently was reading through a book of pre-Roe v. Wade abortion stories that were pulled together by our local NARAL affiliate. It's a book titled In Our Own Words, and you can get it online. But one of the women who became an abortion provider prior to Roe v. Wade was deeply influenced by her experience of being in a hospital and having an 11-year-old girl come in to give birth. And she said she looked like a balloon with a head and two arms and two legs.
Yeah.
And she watched as that girl went into labor and then died. And so for her, the morality of this question was clear from that moment on.
Yeah. I mean, last week, I played a 5-minute video from Dr. Kreeft, and, he was talking about the first cause argument, and I refuted it, and I got a lot of corrections and a lot of people saying, you should have done this. And I think we've all got our take on those arguments. And it's fun and it's interesting to debate the things at the beginning of the universe and the first cause argument. But at some point, the rubber meets the road.
Yeah.
And now we have religion affecting people. And on one side, you've got these really fun first cause arguments, but the same guy talking about morality would have that death happen. That would be moral to him.
Yeah, the rubber really needs to meet the road somewhere before we get to the point where we're discussing pregnant 10-year-olds.
I suppose.
You know? We need to back up a little bit there and set our morality boundaries a little bit further from where they actually impact real people.
But it's a question that people ask a lot. You know, where's the harm in religion? Where's the harm in belief? Where's the harm in these authoritarian structures?
Yeah.
And even people who I have, a conversation where we disagree. It wasn't really a conversation. I played his video and responded to it. It was half a conversation. but this is, this is the harm, is these ideas, outmoded ideas, these ideas that have been long established as not scientific and not part of the reality that we live in, taking that in, you get these terrible arguments about how to treat children who have been victims.
Well, and that's why this Catholic hospital merger question is such a great example of this, because the ethical and religious directives of the Catholic bishops, which get superimposed on these hospitals, are truly horrifying. They have this objectivist kind of moral framework that says certain actions are wrong no matter what the consequences, no matter what the outcomes. And for somebody who believes that morality is about compassion, it's about the well-being, the kind of joy or suffering, the kind of the flourishing or struggling of sentient beings, the consequences of those Catholic teachings are truly horrifying.
Yeah, it we were talking about this in the pre-show, but it just seems weird that all of these organizations, it feels like they've restructured their entire existence to exist around this nucleus of debate against the abortion topic. They used to talk about other things. They're supposed to be, they're supposed to be caregivers, and they're supposed to have the Hippocratic Oath and all that stuff. But at the end of the day, they've restructured, these ethics around this single issue. It really feels that way. Does that seem accurate to you?
I think they are obsessed with this single issue. I call them sometimes fetal fetishists.
Okay.
Because literally they just, it's so divorced from what our normal sense of what a person is. A person can feel delight.
Yeah.
A person can have wants, can have yearnings, can have dreams, can have things, can be afraid, can feel love, can at very minimum, even if you're talking about, you know, like a cat lady and her cat people,
right.
You know, her cat people can feel hunger or thirst or pain or pleasure. And so they're kind of giving these rites of personhood to something that's sometimes the size of a golf ball or smaller that
yeah.
has none of those attributes. It is kind of from an external to theology framework, it feels crazy.
It does. And I mean, they're attributing personhood to things that really can't even be said to have a nervous system yet.
And disturbing how quick they are to give that thing that they're attributing personhood to greater consideration than the person who's already there
yeah.
and potentially suffering or facing the question of whether they will suffer.
So, yeah, absolutely.
It's weird.
We have one more email I'd like to do, and okay. this comes to us from Josh from the internet. And this is, you know, sort of a quick change of topic. I am a recent agnostic, but I am still working on letting go of Christianity. A religious friend of mine sent me this article claiming that there were new discoveries proving Abraham. It was on Yahoo News, so it wasn't a quack site.
Well,
debatable. I appreciate any help you can provide. So apparently this is an agnostic, you know, Christian leaning agnostic. And his friend comes to him and says he's got proof of Abraham.
Yeah, it's actually a really interesting archaeology article. It's basically, the main thrust of the article was how fascinating and great it is that finally a British team of archaeologists has been allowed to dig at a site near what is known as Ur, which was this very ancient settlement in what is now kind of Iraq, Iran, that area.
Yeah.
It's about 4,000 years old, and no one has been able to do digs there except for, as far as I know, just Iraqi, potentially some other Middle Eastern teams from other countries in the area, but definitely no one from Great Britain, no one from Asian countries, as far as I know, no one from the United States or Canada. No one has been allowed to dig there since the 80s. So they finally allowed them back in to dig, and they made some really cool discoveries, including this partially ruined ziggurat, which was kind of like a public works building in that culture at that time.
Right.
No one's really sure what that particular ziggurat was for yet. Hopefully they'll find out as they continue to research it. And some other interesting, you know, artifacts that sort of show the type of clothing these people wore and maybe some of the things that they did in their free time or in their worship, potentially. Nothing that they actually found has any indication of any person named Abraham, much less the dude from the Bible. And the way the name Abraham was included in the article is it was kind of as a human interest piece to link people to the time and place to kind of make them perk up their ears and be like, oh, neat, a new archaeological find. But it never once claimed that anything proved Abraham at all.
It seems what they found was a 9-centimeter clay plaque showing a worshiper wearing a long fringed robe approaching a sacred site.
Yeah,
and so people saw that and said, hey, Abraham, when it could be anything.
It was anything at all. Almost literally anything you can imagine taking place in that time and in that location.
You know, it's kind of crazy because people act as if it's either or. If there was some historical figure, Abraham, then that means that the Bible stories are true. It's like saying, oh my gosh, you know, we found shells buried in the ground in Vietnam. That means Apocalypse Now was nonfiction.
Yeah, I feel the same way about the historicity of Jesus debate. Historically, because Jesus was an important historical figure, whether he existed or not, I think it's an interesting thing to discover. But just because he may exist doesn't prove Christianity in any real way.
No. It doesn't prove the mystical or spiritual, I guess, if you will, aspects of Christianity at all.
Well, and the term, I sometimes have worked with somebody who's a Christian symbologist, but who believes that there was some historical figure, but that he was very, very different from the stories that are in the Bible, which he describes as historicized mythology. So
yeah.
Basically, where you take a pre-existing mythic archetype template, I guess is the better term, and then they add historical details and names and places to that mythic template in order to kind of create this perception that it happened at a specific place and time.
Yeah. Right, and that's common throughout so many different religions dating back so many thousands of years. You just see the same general ideas kind of recycled over and over again.
Yeah, and another thing too is a lot of religious people, they say, religion should be in politics, but politics shouldn't be in religion. But when we're talking about the Bible, we're essentially talking about a document which was formed, written, assembled, and modified by these series of committees throughout history. The Bible is religion by committee in many ways.
And we all know how infallible committees are.
Yeah, and that's what it comes down to is, you know, we can talk about there being proof of these people who existed, but that doesn't prove any of the supernatural claims. And that's what you have to look at, is that's what evidence is. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. When we come back, we're going to get to the bottom of this Catholic hospital thing. Hey, everybody, this is Sam at the offices of Ask an Atheist between commercials to do the announcements I forgot to do during the episode. I have to be honest with you, I was so into what was happening in the episode that I forgot to do any announcements. So here we go. First things first, I have to thank everybody who donated to Peggy's Challenge. As you remember, Peggy from Kent is somebody who donated to the show, challenging listeners of Ask an Atheist to help keep the show funded. As you know, Ask an Atheist is funded through contributions and advertising. So I'd like to thank Robert in Granite Falls, Washington, Ronnie in Denmark, Ken in Seattle, and Bjorn from Germany for helping keep the lights on. We're about halfway through season 12, and this is about the time where I look at our finances and start going, nyeh. So every little bit helps. Every little bit keeps the lights on. Every dollar you give to Ask an Atheist goes directly to keeping the lights on and keeping the show going. To that end, if you're not the kind of person who likes to donate to things, you can go to the Ask an Atheist Summer Benefit Show, June 21st. There are four acts: Animals and Cars, Variety Hour, Sleepy Pilot, and Body Box featuring Nick Kennedy, which if you listened to last week's show, you got to hear a song from their album, Giraffe. So it's something to check out. It's at Louis G's at 5219 Pacific Highway East in Fife. It's $10 at the door, or tickets are available at Brown Paper Tickets. You can check the website askanatheist.tv, and you can pre-order your tickets there. So please, if you can't give, go. If you can't go, give. And now we'll do some commercials, and you'll hear from me in the second break.
Looking to buy or sell a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, or surrounding areas? Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 or visit dndrealty.ca and discover how he works with you to achieve your goals, save you time, and protect your investment. Don Summers of Professional Realty Group. It's time you hired a professional.
Out of the briny depths of the internet comes a comic book podcast so powerful it cannot be contained by a single continent. Mike and Paul, save the universe!
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Paul Root.
If you're an unsatisfied comics fan, we want to help you find better comics.
And if you've never picked up a comic before in your life, we want to help you find what could be your new favorite thing.
On Mike and Paul Save the Universe, we love the bejesus out of comics, and so should you.
Find us online at mikeandpaul.com.
Billy, I'm a certified ghost expert.
Wow, that's so credible.
Billy, your great-great-grandmother says she loves you and to give me your lunch money.
Aw, anything for family. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I know.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. And today we're talking about the Catholic takeover of hospitals in the United States, and Washington State in particular has been getting a lot of attention lately. Like, from the New York Times did an article about Washington State. Valerie, what's going on there? What's the deal?
Well, so hospital mergers are ramping up across the country. There are a number of reasons for that. One of them is that changes in technology are making it hard for little independent hospitals to survive.
Yeah.
The other is that actually with some of the mandates of Obamacare, that is driving changes. They need increased efficiencies, et cetera. And the problem is that what you have is these independent, small, secular hospitals looking for a merger partner who can sustain this massive infrastructure of technology, et cetera. And oftentimes the those big umbrellas that they're merging with are Catholic hospital systems or Catholic healthcare systems. And then what happens is that the Catholic bishops have these mandates called the ethical and religious directives, and those get imposed on the system as a whole. So somebody who's been going to a secular hospital like Swedish, for example, in Seattle, which is now affiliated under Providence, may have no idea that all of a sudden the Catholic bishops have a say in what healthcare options they have.
This is sort of the problem. We have some of these ethical and religious directives here. And the thing we have to talk about these ethical and religious directives that you have to understand is this isn't a document written by doctors. This is not a medically informed doctors. It's not written by women. It's written by a bunch of celibate priests sitting, you know, at the archdiocese hashing this stuff out.
I mean, what you have to understand from my perspective is that the word ethical should be in quotes.
That's really it, and there's a lot here. One of the things that we talk about is one of the things that they talk about is abortion, and they say in cases of extrauterine pregnancy, no intervention is morally licit, which constitutes a direct abortion. So one of the big things that is clear about Catholics about the Catholic Church is they're very anti-abortion, as we talked about in the last segment. So when a secular hospital becomes a Catholic hospital, they stop doing abortions, and they have very strict rules about that.
Swedish Hospital in Seattle went through this incredibly elaborate process to try to protect their right to do emergency abortions. There aren't that many abortions that are actually done in a hospital setting, and when they are done in a hospital setting, it's typically because there's something medically very wrong with either the woman or the fetus or both.
Right.
And so the kind of crazy dancing on heads of a pin theological solution at Swedish, I think, is that a woman has to be wheeled into a building where there's a clinic that isn't controlled by the Catholic Providence oversight.
Right.
The fetus gets an injection that stops the heartbeat, and then once it's a dead fetus, then they can kind of be wheeled back into the hospital in order to have the rest of the procedure done.
Are you kidding?
That is utterly ridiculous. I can't believe in 2013 we have to do this in hospitals. You know, like, why should we even have to make dumb workarounds like that? It's just so silly.
Under the circumstances, I can't think that this doesn't raise the chance of infection and complications if you have to, you know, truck a patient around in order to get around these quote-unquote ethical procedures.
I don't know if it increases the complication rate.
Okay.
I think they're probably handling that pretty carefully, but the bigger question is, do we want theology dictating our healthcare options,
yeah,
or should they be dictated by our own conscience as individual patients and by medical science?
So you say that, you know, in the case of hospitals, when they do abortions, it's not deciding an elective procedure. This is when they do abortions in hospitals, they're usually about something has gone seriously wrong and the life of the patient is actually the problem now.
Over 90% of abortions are done during the first trimester. The majority of abortions are done literally when the gestational sac is something that is slightly smaller than a chicken egg. And And that's those are outpatient procedures. They're simple procedures. They take 5 to 10 minutes, literally, once everything is set up. They're highly safe, so there's no reason for that to happen in a hospital setting. So but the other challenge here is that we're not actually just talking about hospital mergers. We're talking about healthcare systems.
Right.
And the number of hospital beds, because of changes in medical practice, is going to be decreasing in the coming years. There are hospitals that are going to be going out of business. And so these healthcare systems, including the Catholic healthcare corporations, which they call Catholic healthcare ministries,
right,
and that is significant because that's how they view it, they're buying up physician practices, outpatient physician practices across the state and laboratories. So there are all kinds of medical services, a full range of medical services that are coming under the control of the Catholic bishops without people even noticing.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, is we can talk about things happening in clinics, but because of the new procedures and the things that happen, even these clinics and these smaller facilities are becoming parts of these, of sort of the Catholic machine here. Now, one of the we're going to get a bunch of these, you know, arguments. And so one argument we're going to get is, why can't you just go to a different hospital?
Well, that's the really big problem here in Washington State, and that's why all of a sudden a whole bunch of people are sitting up and paying attention. Because if all of the proposed mergers go through this year in Washington, 47% of hospital beds in Washington State will be under some kind of religious control. Currently, approximately a third of hospitalizations in Washington State are under the control of some kind of religious authority.
Right.
And what's shocking is that if those mergers go through, by the end of the year, the hospital, there are counties in Washington State, a number of counties that will have 100% of their beds controlled by religious institutions. So that includes Whatcom County, Skagit County, Snohomish, Clallam, Jefferson. Right now in Pierce and King County, about a third of the beds are controlled by religious institutions. That would go up to just under 50%, or just around 50% in even our most populous counties.
So there's going to be places where a Catholic hospital is your only choice.
It's your only choice. And a lot of times people, you know, you choose a hospital because it's close. You choose a hospital because your doctor says, this is where I deliver babies. People don't even know to ask the questions ahead of time.
Yeah, that is, I was really astounded to hear you list Snohomish as one of the counties that could potentially have 100% hospitals. I live in Snohomish County. It doesn't seem like the kind of place where this could happen, and I'm sort of astounded that this has snuck through to the point where it is now. I don't know. Have you heard of any situations in Catholic hospitals where patient care was actually, like, altered from what would be the normal medical practice because of the Catholic doctrine?
There's a website that's now devoted to this problem in Washington State called Catholic Watch. There's also a national merger watch organization. But one of the stories that came to the attention of the woman who runs Catholic Watch recently was a Seattle couple who were traveling through the Midwest. She went to an emergency, had an emergency situation that turned out to be an ectopic pregnancy. The hospital that was closest that she ended up in was a Catholic hospital, and they told her that she needed to have her fallopian tube removed, which and we're like talking about how to go about this surgery, right? When it turns out, in a non-Catholic setting, all you actually need to do is inject something into that fallopian tube to destroy the developing embryo, and then a woman is left with her fertility intact. But for the Catholic hospital, you can't just inject something in that kills the embryo, because that's a direct abortion. And instead, what they're willing to do is to indirectly kill the embryo by removing the whole fallopian tube, which actually then puts the woman's fertility at risk.
That just seems, who do they think they're fooling? I hope they don't think they're fooling God with that one, because well, you're gonna pull out the organ where the fetus is living, but not do anything to the actual fetus. Like, what do you think the outcome of that's going to be?
One of the problems here isn't just that I'm reading about, isn't just that they won't do these things. It's about control of information. If I remember right about that story when Becky was telling me about it, the patient had to Google her, you know, had to Google what she was going through, and she found out by reading through Google that this, she didn't have to have her whole fallopian tube removed. So not only do they not do these things, but they won't tell you that they don't do these things. And they make their quote unquote moral alternatives sound like the only option.
What's terrifying for us as patients is that, you know, you trust your doctor to give you science-based, evidence-based information about what your best options are when you come in. You're in a completely vulnerable situation.
Yeah.
It's not a patient's job to know what the latest and greatest is in terms of medical procedures. And yes, the problem is that they don't even have any obligation to disclose the fact that there are better treatment options in a secular hospital.
Yeah. So getting something a little less, you know, dire than abortion, we can just talk about contraception. Is in the ERD, it says Catholic health institutions may not promote or condone contraceptive practices.
So to me, that's the opposite of moral, right?
Yeah.
It's immoral.
Yeah.
What we have so much information that shows that when children come into the world intended, women are able to do both preconception health care. They're able to plan their finances. They're able to then kind of have good health practices during the first few weeks of pregnancy that increase the child's health. Their finances end up better. Those children are less at risk for a whole host of social problems. So what this Catholic directive does is it actively creates harm in society. But again, people might say, well, you know, in a hospital setting, that's not a big deal. Most people don't get their contraception from a hospital setting. Here's why it's a big deal. The best time to do a tubal ligation is often right after giving birth. And if a woman goes into a Catholic-controlled hospital and she's ready to be done having her children, she has to have a whole separate surgical procedure. She can't just have it done at the time of the delivery or at the time of the C-section.
Yeah.
The other thing is that we now know that the very best, most effective contraception on the market is long-acting reversible contraceptives like IUDs and implants. The IUDs are actually quite compatible with breastfeeding, and the CDC recently said that we should be increasing offering women an IUD it's called a post-placental or postpartum IUD that goes in during the first 24 hours after a woman gives birth. That can go in within 10 minutes of the placenta coming out, actually. And then that totally reduces the risk of her ending up with back-to-back pregnancies, which again have health risks for the mother and for the second child. So in a Catholic setting, women aren't even going to learn that this is the new latest, greatest medical practice standards.
Yeah, and what also really struck me is that this document also restricts the ability, or in many cases eliminates the ability, for doctors to offer reproductive technology, essentially fertility treatment.
That seems idiosyncratic to me. Why wouldn't they do that?
Because they believe in the sanctity of the Marriage Act, what they call the Marriage Act, which means sex.
Wow.
And that it is for the purpose of procreation and procreation only. And the statement in the ERDs is, quote, reproductive technologies that substitute for the Marriage Act are not consistent with human dignity.
What?
That's very... One, I euphemisms are great for jokes. They're great for hanging out with your friends. But if you have to use euphemisms in the medical setting where it leaves a question as to what you actually mean, that can't be good. That can't be moral.
Right. You mean the Marriage Act?
The Marriage Act,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
Wow. And so specifically with fertility treatments, if I remember right, this is not something I know much about, they fertilize several embryos and they plant several of them hoping that one takes. Is that the idea?
Well, that's not the only problem with it from a Catholic perspective, right? I mean, that is one of the things that they are morally opposed to, because those little fertilized eggs are people, don't you know?
Right.
But even though I have to digress and say that even though God himself aborts 60% or more,
right,
of those fertilized eggs, that most of them simply flush out onto a woman's panty liner when she has her next period. But the issue is that they kind of have elevated sex to this sacred status. And part of what this means is that gay and lesbian couples, you know, also don't have access to reproductive services.
There's two things there. One, I like to say a lot, is, you know, these are organizations that have at their heart, when you take away the dancing, when you take away all of the culture, what you have are hierarchical structures for social control. And if you want to control people, control how they eat, control how they relate to other people, and control sex.
Yep.
And you have control of people. But the other thing that you mentioned, which I think is very important, especially in Washington State, is that is because the Catholic Church is against, you know, the whole LGBT idea. And so what kind of treatment is a trans person going to expect when they go to a hospital?
No, they explicitly exclude treatment for trans people. And already couples who are married, queer couples who are married in Washington State, have been refused the dignity of being acknowledged as married couples.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Is that not illegal?
Well, we're going to find out, aren't we?
Yeah, I suppose.
Oh, man.
But my fear in this case is, one, they won't do, you know, they won't do trans therapy. But the other thing is, what happens if you're a trans person and you get into an accident and you get airlifted to a Catholic hospital? What kind of care can you expect under these circumstances, where they see you as less of a person, or a person in violation of the strictures of God, compared to other patients?
I think that's one of the scary things, again, for patients, because when you're a hospital patient, when you're that sick, you are so vulnerable, and you don't want to do anything that would offend your medical provider, right? I mean, I was recently had an outpatient surgery in a clinic that I, you know, somebody reassured me that they were great practitioners because they were good Christians, and they had, you know, I saw the Bible in the waiting room, and I had to kind of reassure myself that there are lots of people who can divorce kind of evidence-based medicine from their Christian beliefs, which are kind of faith-based. But I felt like, oh my gosh, I hope my Freedom from Religion Foundation thing on my computer didn't get noticed, or because what if, right? I'm going under anesthesia.
Yeah.
I personally, that happened to me, you know, last year. I was hospitalized and I went to a Catholic hospital, and I knew, and I was being hospitalized while this show was on the air. I was being admitted. So I'm doing the process of the show that I can do. I'm checking the websites. I'm getting things ready, because otherwise I'm just going to sit there mewling in pain. And then I realize that I'm doing this in a Catholic hospital and I'm about to be admitted. And it's very clear. Everybody around me, we're talking about Ask an Atheist. We're talking about what I've missed. And then they go, what are your religious practices? And I have to say, explicitly none. I am actually an atheist activist. I said it straight out, and fortunately, I think I received, you know, good care. That was a concern of mine. How am I going to be treated? Do they know, oh, there's an atheist activist in a Catholic hospital? Let's send a bunch of people after him to see what he can do.
What I think is also, I mean, I've worked in hospitals before, and what I also think is kind of disturbing about this whole thing is that it really restricts the way doctors and other healthcare workers can practice their profession. Because
yeah.
I think most people who go and work at Catholic hospitals are probably not Catholic.
That's
where the jobs are.
That's the thing, is most of these doctors aren't Catholic at Catholic hospitals.
The doctors aren't Catholic. The other thing that's really twisted is that the funding isn't Catholic. People don't realize that less than 5% of the money that flows through Catholic healthcare institutions actually comes from the Catholic Church. Most of it is public dollars. They are administrating our taxpayer dollars and then using our taxpayer dollars to essentially fund their ideology.
So these hospitals, which are explicitly religious and won't do things specifically because of religion, are publicly funded.
They're publicly funded. They're publicly licensed to serve the general public. Most of the practitioners are not Catholics. It's that the Catholic Church is the administrator of our funds and our services. And so what they're actually doing mostly is spending Medicare dollars, Medicaid dollars, county appropriations. They get federal dollars allocated even through the 1946 Hospital Survey and Construction Act that allow them to get capital campaign funding. They get tax-exempt government bonds. And then most of the rest of the funding comes from insurance payments and investments. So incredibly little of what's flowing through those Catholic hospitals is actually provided by the church.
I'm not a lawyer. I don't know much about this stuff, but I just can't help but think that there's an establishment problem here. I really can't.
Yeah.
This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. When we come back, we're going to continue talking about Catholic hospitals and how they affect you.
Hey, it's me again with some more announcements. Have you ever yearned to attend a post-show event? Sam and Becky will be taking Ask an Atheist on the road this summer during the month of July. Yes, I am Sam, and I'm talking in the third person. I'm one of those weird guys. We'll be recording episodes in front of a live audience for later broadcast and podcast. If you live in California, the Southwest, Texas, Oklahoma, Missouri, Illinois, Wisconsin, or the Northern Plain States, and you'd like to see Ask an Atheist in your city, contact us at info@askanatheist.tv or ask a question via the website form. Encourage your group leaders to get in touch with us. We'd love to see you. I'm really looking forward to this. So we're starting to finalize our plans for the trip, so now would be a great time to contact us. Also, if you'll notice, we're starting to change up the music on the show a little bit, and if you'd like to contribute to Ask an Atheist Sound, feel free to send us submissions or requests or information or whatever, questions@askanatheist.tv, or again, click that red, shiny, candy-like button at the top of the page at askanatheist.tv. And now, for the rest of the show.
So, picking you up at 8 tonight?
Sure.
How do I get to your place again?
Get off the freeway, turn left at the burger joint, past the Humanist Center, right at the...
What? Humanist Center?
Yeah, you know, the place where freethinkers have their meetings, hold events, access the resource library, drop their kids off for daycare.
This could be you and your friends in the near future. Contribute to the Humanists of Washington Humanist Center Fund to establish a physical home for freethinkers in the Puget Sound. Go to humanistsofwashington.org and contribute today. That's humanistsofwashington.org.
Doyle's Public House is Tacoma's number one spot for the best selection of import brews and Irish whiskey.
Football matches and Red Sox games, knowledge night and no cover live music.
Doyle's is your spot.
Check us out at doylespublichouse.com or stop by for a proper libation and soda bread at 2nd and St. Helens Avenue in Tacoma.
Like us on Facebook for all the latest updates and specials.
Doyle's in Tacoma.
2nd and St. Helens Avenue in Tacoma. doylespublichouse.com.
So what does everybody want to play?
Something new?
Something with guns. Lots of guns.
Something that supports playing other than combat, you knob.
Jerk face.
All right, how about Dead Stars from Dame and I Publishing? It's a sci-fi game that uses the Universal Decay rules. This system has an emphasis on social and technical skills, yet allows technical characters to make thousands of different weapons.
Hey, psionics.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna be a bug with big freaking guns.
Shape-shifting tech head for me.
Check out DameandI.net for the sci-fi horror game Dead Stars, or to get involved in the community forums. Dead Stars, now available on Amazon.
Atheism TV. News, events, community, entertainment, debates, conferences. A massive repository of over 3,000 recent and fascinating atheist videos from all over the internet. Or watch The Infidel, our own regular news show. Visit the shopping area and buy something for that special atheist in your life. Or rent captivating shows, movies, and documentaries directly in your browser. Atheism TV, the world's best source of atheist videos. Visit atheismtv.com.
So you're on your Monday morning drive, and someone on Ask an Atheist says something that really, really gets your goat. You want to talk, you want to yell, you want to scream, and clicking the shiny red candy-like button just isn't good enough. Good! Call us! Leave us a message! Call Ask an Atheist at 206-420-0997 and vent your spleen now and for the future! That's 206-420-0997 and wait for the tone.
If you enjoy the programming we create on Ask an Atheist, please make a contribution with us. Your sponsorship keeps our show in the air and improves the quality of our broadcasts. Don't make us beg. Please go to askanatheist.tv and contribute today.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist 253-584-1480. And we're talking about Catholic hospitals and what that means for healthcare in the United States. Now, we were talking about this, but like when we had Shelley Siegel in and we got booted out by that coffee house, people were saying that's a business. They have a right to do that. You wouldn't want to have fundamentalist Christians in your business establishment. They're incorrect about that, but that, you know, there are atheists who are going to believe that. They have a right to do that. In this case, since we are talking about businesses being run by religions, do they have a right to do stuff like this?
Well, so in the first place, civil law and civil rights law has to trump religious beliefs or we have no society. And Scalia actually made that argument.
Wow.
Ironically. But the The other issue here is that these are public accommodations. They're public accommodations that are licensed to serve the general public using public dollars, and that changes the equation.
Yeah.
And Washington State actually has even stronger protections for separation of church and state than the U.S. Constitution does. So it's very possible that what's going on here is a constitutional violation in Washington State. But the problem is that this is happening across the country. Washington's spearheading it because it's been accelerated here.
We've been made the front line, and that actually brings me to a question that I should ask. It seems like that this might be a backdoor method by controlling the hospitals and controlling the medical infrastructure of winning the day of the abortion fight without having to be legislatively involved whatsoever. Do you think that's an intentional strategy on their part?
I don't know how much it's intentional and how much it's an artifact of history, but I would say it is highly effective, and it's really clear that in Washington State, they're not going to win by going to the general public, right? And this is the state that encoded Roe v. Wade into state law prior to Roe v. Wade, right? This is a state where we passed the Reproductive Privacy Act in 1991 that says every individual has the fundamental right to choose or refuse birth control, and every woman has a fundamental right to choose or refuse an abortion. This is where we passed the kind of Anderson Murray anti-discrimination law in 2006 that prohibits discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation, even though religious institutions are exempt, which is another problem. We pass death with dignity here, right?
That's another thing, is we are very lucky to live in the one part of the United States where death with dignity exists. So and they write about this in their directives. A Catholic healthcare institution will not honor an advanced directive that is contrary to Catholic teaching. So Catholic hospitals won't do death with dignity.
They won't do death with dignity. And in fact, I had a woman reach out to me from Bellingham whose husband had died of cancer and actually blogged through his cancer process. But in the end, when he was in hospice, one of the things that happened was that he had a death with dignity kind of provider who was working with him to help him be empowered to choose if he needed to go. And their hospice setting was run by Peace Health, a Catholic entity, and that person who was really important to him wasn't even allowed in his hospice setting.
Oh, that I can't imagine being in that kind of a situation with one of my loved ones who, you know, we had gone through all this process of arranging to have an advocate like that, and having them denied in hospice, that's cruel. It is so unethical.
I'm one of those guys that if I had advanced directives, they would say, try anything, you know, hook me up to jumper cables, whatever, you know. Up until a certain point, if my brain is gone, I'm dead. Whether or not my body lives, I'm gone. And honestly, I would be offended if people were pumping money, literally pumping money into me. Not literally, but nearly literally. And just to keep the meat going.
Well, that's the problem with this. These are immoral directives from my standpoint, right? For me too, it would be immoral for somebody to use funds, services to keep my body alive when my brain was no longer me.
Yeah.
And we live in a world where children are starving to death, right? Yeah. Where there's all kinds of services being denied people who want to live. It's immoral.
I agree.
I totally agree. I can't understand how anybody can make an argument that it is moral, frankly.
Well, when you've rewritten what morality means and the source of morality, I mean, when you have such fine control over what you're allowed to believe and what you're not allowed to believe, completely absent the evidence, you can make morality whatever you want it to be. Morality just becomes a null word. It's just mouth noises at that point.
You quoted the ethical and religious directives from the Catholic bishops earlier, saying, you know, reproductive technologies are not consistent with human dignity. I mean, it's Orwellian, right?
Yeah.
What do you mean it's not consistent with human dignity? To me, it's not consistent with human dignity to keep someone on life support after they're gone. That Shivo thing, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, there's another aspect to this, which is we are at the point now where we are going to start seeing technologies that come from places that the Catholic Church finds objectionable. And it seems to me that since they're already doubling down now, that it's not going to get any better in the future, and the quality of care that you're actually going to get at these institutions is going to decrease when we start seeing real treatments for cancer, real treatments for things like arthritis, real treatments coming out of stem cell therapy.
Absolutely, it's going to get worse. And in fact, the Catholic bishops know that. They spend millions of dollars a year kind of working to be out in front in terms of their knowledge of biomedical technologies and looking at what's in the pipeline and then writing their Catholic guidelines and seeking to shape both law and policy based on their conservative interpretation of bioethics.
Oh, those scumbags. That's such a dirty deed.
And as it's had its effects. Stem cell therapy, you know, research in the United States is not what it could be because of stuff like this.
Right. It's not just, by the way, death with dignity where they mess around with things at the end of life. They specifically say with regard to advance directives, a Catholic healthcare institution will not honor any advance directive that is contrary to Catholic teaching. So the directives of the Catholic bishop trump your written directive as a patient.
Your own choices, your own ability to make choices about who you are, whether or not you're a Catholic, are being presided over by a bishop who is not a medical professional, who may not know anything about medicine, may not actually care about you, or specifically does not care about you, only cares that you do what he says.
It's worse than that, because they actually believe that suffering has redemptive value.
This is, and I saved this for last for a reason, this just frosts me over, and this is what they specifically say about death with dignity. Patients experiencing suffering that cannot be alleviated should not be helped to appreciate the Christian understanding
should be helped to
appreciate the Christian understanding of redemptive suffering.
What
they are telling you is whether or not you believe in what they believe in, you should suffer for their God. You suffer. You experience the pain so that they may feel more holy.
Valerie, please tell me we're trying to do something about this. What are we doing?
Well, so the ACLU of Washington has, you know, over the course of 3 months has totally ramped up their focus on this. They now have staff time dedicated full time to this kind of question of the hospital mergers. There has been merger by merger, Merger Watch across the country has been fighting these battles and sometimes winning, sometimes preventing an individual merger. But here in Washington State, what we're after is a statewide solution. And we have strong enough laws. We have a strong enough secular population here. We have people who cherish their ability to kind of manage their own dying process. So if there's any place that can kind of figure out a statewide solution to prevent the Catholic bishops from having a say in your decision to decide whether or when to have a child, in your ability to decide to manage your own dying process, it's going to be here in Washington State. If anyone who's listening to this show has stories of religious interference in your medical care, whether or not you're a resident of Washington, those stories are needed right now. And you can go to the ACLU of Washington and look at their My Health page. They've got a form there that they can fill out, whether you're a provider or whether this happened to you as a patient or a family member. And they're very conscious of the need to protect confidentiality around those stories.
Oh, good. I was just going to ask what we can do to help out. And I really hope everybody listening, if you have any kind of a story related, will go and add to it. Because if we have the chance to stop this happening in Washington, we may be able to set some kind of precedent for other states where it's going to be more difficult to fight against it.
And one of the potential flaws in this process is that harm, people have to be damaged. People have to hurt. People are going to experience suffering that they have never experienced before on the path to getting this fixed. And we can talk about hypotheticals all we want, but real people are being harmed by these things. You have stories.
We have stories. I mean, there's the horror story that's going on right now where the Catholics control healthcare in El Salvador, and there's this woman, Beatrice, whose life is at risk, and they won't let her abort an anencephalic fetus, meaning a fetus with no brain that has no hope of living. But even here in the United States, there are horror stories already about them not honoring end-of-life directives. So somebody kind of wrote that in response to one of my articles on this topic, they said a Catholic doctor at a Catholic hospital went against my daughter's wishes and signed her signed consent to have a hysterectomy hysterectomy because of severe endometriosis. One ovary had already exploded. My daughter had never intended or desired to have children, nor was she in a suitable situation to have a child. She was single and in her late 20s. When she awoke from surgery, she learned that the doctor had overridden her wishes at a Catholic hospital and her overridden her consent in an attempt to save her fertility, because in this religious framework, a woman is a vessel. That is her primary value. The operation was botched, leaving my daughter on permanent disability and in pain and with more health problems than she had before. Another person wrote, my elderly mother had a stroke in 2008 and was taken to Jane Phillips Hospital in Bartlesville, Oklahoma. Like the patient referred to in a previous article, she was paralyzed and unable to speak or swallow. She had executed an advanced directive which said she did not want artificial hydration or nutrition, and she assigned me as her healthcare proxy. But because her condition was not, quote, terminal, she was given forced food, and her directive was overridden by the doctors in the hospital, and she received a feeding tube.
Oh. Wow, it's the Catholic Church. It almost feels like a theme. It's the Catholic Church preying upon the weakest of us. You know, we can me and Mike have talked a lot about the child molestation problem in the Catholic Church. This is another side of it. This is a country in Europe preying upon the weakest of us, the children, the sick, the dying, so that their ideology can be supported. Again, so not so that you can feel what you want to feel, so that they can feel more holy.
What's lower than preying on children, pregnant women, and people who are dying?
Yeah.
Why are we letting this happen? How did it get like this? And why are we not stopping it immediately? I mean, I know it's not as simple as that, but that's my immediate reaction to it. It's so disturbing.
Whatever your politics are, I think it's clear to a lot of people that healthcare is a mess.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And here is an organization with funds and with the drive to do it and with an ideology that sort of pushes them in that direction. And so there's a vacuum, and they are filling it. It isn't really that's what's going on?
Well, the secular hospitals are desperate for funds, and they need to kind of create these mergers. And so, again, you have the Catholic Church being exploitative, right? They're taking advantage of desperation.
Yeah.
People like the children's the Swedish administration, this was the only way they were going to be able to continue providing uncompensated care for poor people.
Yeah.
And so they end up arm-twisted, agreeing to these things that feel disturbing and in violation of the ethics of many of the doctors who work there.
It's so disturbing. I know so many people who work in healthcare, and I'm astounded when I think about people I know being forced into this, like, morally objectionable code by a corporation and ultimately by a country in Europe, like you said, who have nothing to do with the care they're actually providing their patients.
So we've spoken about the Catholic, you know, these Catholic health organizations vaguely, and I think it's important that we name names because they don't, you know, sometimes you don't know you're in a Catholic place until you enter the room and there's the crucifix on the door. So these organizations are Peace Health, obviously Franciscan and Catholic Health Initiatives, but also Providence and Ascension. And then there's another organization called Adventist, which is not a Catholic organization.
It's not a Catholic organization, and they don't impose their theological beliefs in the same way. But what's more problematic is, like, what people don't know is you go to Highline Hospital, it's now controlled by the Catholics. Everett General is now kind of Swedish, and Swedish is controlled by the Catholics. So sometimes you're two or three steps removed. You have no idea that there is any theological restrictions on your health care.
Yeah. And in a lot of cases, to be moved to a different hospital is risking death.
It can be, yeah.
So it's the weirdest thing to me in this case. No, it's not weird. It's terrible. This is what I've come to expect from big religions, from religions with these huge infrastructures that in the past dominated what they saw as civilization and wouldn't mind returning to that position.
Here's what they would do if they had the chance. In 2009, there was a mother of five who was admitted to St. Joseph's Hospital in Phoenix with a probably lethal pregnancy. She was going to die if she didn't get an abortion, and the nun in charge approved the abortion for that reason. She's a 27-year-old mother of five. She wanted to go home to her kids.
Yeah.
The nun was excommunicated, and the hospital itself was booted out of the Catholic system temporarily because the bishops united in saying that that mother should have been allowed to die.
Really? So
how ethical of them.
But the hospital, so a nun decided that she needed to have the fetus aborted, and that this was a nun deciding. Imagine what this nun is going through. She's trying to save lives. This is what doctors do. They feel strongly about this. Otherwise, they would not be doctors.
This is the level of harm they're willing to impose for their theology. Five motherless children versus aborting a first trimester fetus.
Yeah. It just seems like this is a problem that's really early days, that's just being recognized by organizations like the ACLU. There's a lot to be done here. So if you were looking for something in the atheism community to say this is something that religion is doing that is actively harming people, here you are. This is what it is.
Spread the word. Yeah. Tell your friends. Go to the ACLU of Washington, My Health, and have people tell their stories.
Yeah, and trust me, this is not the last time we will be talking about this. But this week, that's all the time that we have. My name is Sam Mulvey. With me is Libby Grant and Valerie Tirico. Thank you both very much. Production assistant is Rebecca Friedman. Music is by Chris Coleman and Phil Whitfield. Post show is at Doyle's at 5 p.m., and we're probably in a better mood than we are here today. You can call us at 206-420-0997 or email us at questions@askanatheist.tv. See you next week.
Clay Radio, your conversation station. KLAY Lakewood, Tacoma, on 1180 AM.
IRN USA Radio News. I'm Cameron Swayze. White House Senior Advisor Dan Pfeiffer told Fox News Sunday.